Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to be with you on this Wednesday. We roll back in around 1:30, 1:45 this morning. And back to work on the next one. Let's see what the Kevin Herr memo of the day happens to be. Usually this is an exciting part of my day where we get to unlock the Kevin Herr mind.
Unfortunately, it's a little shorter than normal today because I was running late getting it to you.
Running late? I see. Here's the memo. Topics. Teams are playing in the FanDuel Legends Classic.
Well, they did.
But Emmert says, right. But Emmert says no to advertising during the tournament. The NCAA is the governing body. Why don't they have a say in the sponsors of these tournaments early in the season? It's a good question. It's a very good question. And schools are allowed to play in tournaments such as that, Kevin. That's on their own. It's not NCAA. In other words, they're sanctioned as games. But these tournaments have their own sponsors to them. And so the Gazelle Group ran the tournament you're talking about. And the Gazelle Group, which is, you know, runs, Penn State's been in Gazelle tournaments before. They were in the Philly Hoops Classic, for example. That was a Gazelle-run tournament. And that group ran it. And the same thing with the one that was at the Barclays Center you're talking about. The NCAA has control, Kevin, over the NCAA tournament. That's where they have control. So he's saying no to any advertising when it comes to the NCAA tournament from FanDuel or DraftKings.
I understand that.
Right, right. And that's what he's talking about. So he's really in between a rock and a hard place in terms of the in-season stuff because they don't really have control over the in-season stuff like that.
But the only problem with that is you're the governing body of this of sports, of college sports. So don't you really have the authority to say, no, I don't think so.
No,
because,
you do not. No,
well, then don't. What if they didn't? If the NCAA really wants to take a stand here, maybe they don't sanction the tournament.
No, you don't want to do that. No, look, it's an in-season tournament. It's a business arrangement with the Gazelle Group who runs the tournament. All right, so the Gazelle Group runs the tournament. They send out the invitation. Schools say yes, and you go from there. After that, it's up to them as to how they procure advertising for it. Does it have an effect on the tournament itself? No, it has zero effect on the tournament itself. As for the NCAA, they've elected to have no sponsorship of their tournament that they run and they sponsor. And that's the NCAA postseason basketball tournament. They don't sponsor in-season tournaments. They're the governing body, and part of this question was whether or not they should play NCAA tournament games in Las Vegas. I see no issue with that at all. None. What's the difference between holding an NCAA tournament game in Las Vegas? And he's open to that, by the way. I see no issue with that. It brings the tournament to another part of the country. What's the difference? You already have the Pac-12, Mountain West. I think one year there were five different conferences that held their postseason tournament in Las Vegas. Five different ones. He attended three of them himself last year, which that's just a statement. Let's see.
Well, you know, the other thing that goes with this is the NCAA, obviously, because it runs their tournament, can tell CBS and Host Communications, who I believe still has the broadcast rights to it for radio, you can't.
Westwood does, but.
Well, I think it's actually Westwood that distributes it, but I think Host is the one that actually, you know, produces everything from a technological standpoint. But anyway, they can say you don't have FanDuel or DraftKings as a sponsor. These are your sponsors. These are people who cannot sponsor this event. But that's because they have control of that.
They have control of it. And you cannot look at the Gazelle Group as an outside entity sponsoring a college basketball tournament at the Barclays Center and tell them who they can and can't have sponsors.
No, I understand that.
For example, Penn State has played at the Mohegan Sun before at the casino. They're going to play at the casino when they go to the Orleans Arena. Okay, so what? It's an arena. They have an arena, so you play there. What's the difference? No difference between that and who's sponsoring it. I mean, I don't think there's any difference to that at all. And I think now for FanDuel and for DraftKings, their issues go much bigger than whether the NCAA wants them in any sponsorship role or not. This goes far beyond that. They have legitimate trouble right now, as Tony Knopp talked about last week. Not just with the New York Attorney General, not just with pending legislation in Pennsylvania. They've already been banned in Nevada. They have a legitimate concern right now. They took advantage of a window of opportunity, the organizers of FanDuel and DraftKings. And the organizers, if they still have a stake in it, which I assume they do, they've made a ton of money in a short period of time. A ton in a short period of time. I mean, the money's flowing in left and right from these two. So in that window of opportunity, they took advantage of a loophole and they made it work. Nothing wrong with that. They're smart. They saw the loophole. It worked. It's legal. It's not illegal what they're doing. It is absolutely legal what they're doing based on the 2006 Internet Act. Will there be a change? Possibly.
I would think so.
I'd say, but it would have to come legislatively either from Congress or from state legislatures across the country. I believe five state legislatures have stepped in.
I have tried to look at this from a DraftKings FanDuel perspective. And their argument is that the federal administration, the U.S. federal administration, considers fantasy sports a skills game. That's the loophole you're talking about, where it's not a game of chance. It's a skills game. As someone who's played fantasy, is there some skill involved in it? Okay, I'm willing to concede that there is a little skill involved in it, but you have no control over how the player plays. If the player gets injured, if the player gets benched, there is no control over any of that. The only skill involved in this game is picking a guy who seems to be a player that will get you points. To me, that's a real reach.
But what is the difference in a game of skill in your ability to pick Antonio Brown to be one of your five guys versus your ability to tell me that the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to beat the spread and beat the Tennessee Titans?
Because you've totally with
a lot of analytics. What's the difference between the two? There's, in my opinion, there is no difference between the two.
The only skill in this game is, like I said, finding a player that makes sense. Like, for instance, someone who is skilled would know that the first string running back is probably a better person to play than the third string running back. That still doesn't make it a game of skill. That makes it a game of common sense.
I understand. As we just talked about and agreed on, what's the difference between you having the skill to look at the Rams 49ers matchup and saying that even when the Rams struggled a bit, they matched up so well against the 49ers, they pushed them to the limit. Now that the Rams have a little more talent on their roster, there's a chance they can beat them and beat the spread. What's the difference? There is no difference in the skill of picking five fantasy players as opposed to picking Green Bay to win and beat the spread at Lambeau Field against somebody.
You have a better argument in going out and having a round of golf and betting on who's going to win the round of golf, whether it's going to be you or the person or Steve Jones who I'm playing against, because I have control over how well I play. That would be considered a game of skill. That you could loophole, I would think would be legal.
I've actually seen you play several times.
Right, I knew opened the door up for you, but you get my point.
We can debate the game of skill very much here, if you would.
But that's I think the big difference is that's where I could see the use of the definition skill involved, because there is skill involved. It you have full control over how well you play.
Right.
You do not have full control over how well Antonio Brown's getting guarded that week.
Right. Well, that's interesting. We have a lot going on today.
I was really frightened, though, when I actually read the Mark Emmert interview, and I actually agreed with a lot of the stuff he was saying. I actually had to reread it again to make sure.
You can agree with certain things he says, but there's nothing wrong with that. No,
yeah, but I haven't in a long time. That's my point.
I understand that, but this is an interesting stance. And you have to take a stance on it. As I pointed out, when it came to the Indiana law, and they came out so strongly about it, and then I told everybody about the backstory that the people at the NCAA didn't even know the law existed until somebody on the outside told them about it. Okay, that's where you become frightened about the entire organization. Oh, they come out and they're strong on it. Backstory is office is 3 miles from Capitol. Did not know bill passed. Okay, that should worry you about who's running the thing. All right, okay, no offense, but that should worry you. Hey, strong stance. Didn't know. Really? Oh, really?
Oops.
Wow. And that's true. That's true. That's a true story. They did not know, and their office is 3 miles from the Capitol building. Okay? Not 300, three. They all live there. It's on the radio every day. It's in every newspaper every day. And the organization did not know. That should scare the living daylights out of you.
I did have one thing that I didn't put on your sheet, and that's the Major League Baseball recommendation for protective netting between the dugouts and any field-level seats within 70 feet of home plate.
Penn State did this years ago. It was not, the State College Spikes were not the ones that proposed it. It was Penn State that did this and put it up. At first, the fans grumbled about having the nets extended to the edge of the dugouts. I'm talking to the outer edge of the dugouts, where the entire dugout area was covered, which really expanded the area. But now, everyone knows it was a really, really smart move. Coming up on today's show, Anthony Cosenza from CincyJungle.com. We're going to talk about your favorite team,
the
Cincinnati Bengals. You know what? What's more bungling, losing in the first round of the playoffs or every year at home losing in the AFC Championship game?
When they win a first-round playoff game, I shall stop calling them that.
My point is every team is different. Your team overcame that and then won a couple of Super Bowls after that. Everybody has to take a step. For years, the Raiders could not win, quote, the big game, couldn't win it. And finally broke through and won Super Bowl XI. You know, you get that breakthrough moment. Now, Cincinnati may not have that breakthrough moment, but you have to be smart enough to realize it's a possibility. Anthony Cosenza, CincyJungle.com, is going to join us. Also, Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com today. Tomorrow, we will have on Mike Doc Emmerich from NBC Sports. We will not discuss his Olympic memories of Sochi.
Oh, darn it.
That's because we're trying to keep the audience. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options.
auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Welcome back. Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, Humble's Wharf. This day in sports history coming up after the news. Then we'll have Anthony Cosenza from CincyJungle.com, which is part of SB Nation. We'll have him to talk about the 10-2 Cincinnati Bengals, who will take on the Steelers this week. But get his perspective on what's allowed them to get to this point in the season. Why have they been able to carve out what is at the moment the best record in the AFC? And then Adam Rittenberg at 4:06 after our play-by-play call of the day. We'll have Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com on to break down college football. Tomorrow, Doc Emmerich of NBC Sports. There is no better play-by-play announcer. Now, there's a bunch of people that fall into that category, but there's no better play-by-play announcer than Doc Emmerich. And we will have him on the show tomorrow from NBC Sports. It's great to have him on. Without question, one of the best. And I think the word legendary applies to him. And you know what's neat about him? He's the last person that would want to hear that. He is as down to earth as anybody you will ever meet in your life. Same thing with the guy that does the NBA, Mike Breen. Mike Breen's guest lectured in my class. We've exchanged emails over time. Mike's the same way. No ego at all. There is no need for ego in this business. Just want to enjoy your work and just work hard and get it done. He'll tell you that it's great to show up at the rink all the time, that he'll never want to miss a morning skate. That's why people said to me, you go to practice all the time, you go to shoot around all the time. Yeah, you don't want to miss anything. Why not? Don't want to miss a single thing. All right, we have a lot of basketball coming up and wrestling here on WKOK. Schick Lemmy's at Milton tomorrow night, 7:06 with a 7:30 airtime following Santa. Coming up at 2:06 on Saturday is Mifflin County at Shikellamy, and then wrestling coming up as well on one's on WKOK.com, and wrestling's on WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Does this make this WKOK sundown?
This time of year, it might. I hadn't really thought of that.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Before we get to this day in sports history, Kevin is driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle, which, by the way, would make a great holiday gift.
Yeah, I'm sure you could find a bow that maybe even Sunbury Motors Hyundai has a bow for on top of the hood of the Santa Fe Limited. The Santa Fe Limited, you're going to enjoy gas mileage in the mid-upper 20s for a vehicle that does have all-wheel drive capabilities in certain models. That's not a bad deal. You'll also find a leather interior as well as the heated steering wheel, one of the great options that you don't see on a lot of vehicles. It's available on this particular vehicle, along with HD radio and a very smooth ride. You know, some of these front-wheel drive SUVs have a little bit of a bumpy ride. You feel every roll and every bump in the road. Not with the Hyundai Santa Fe, with the outstanding bumper-to-bumper warranty that will cover you basically through the life of your lease and or loan, you won't have any worries at all. Find out how you can get a big bow for on the hood and drive it under the big Christmas tree out front. Probably won't make it in the living room. Wouldn't recommend that.
But with $4,000 off the sticker price, you're going to have lots of time to spend and lots of money to spend shopping for presents to fill the backside of that vehicle as well. Find out more at Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury.
Time now for this day in sports history. 1926, the United States Golf Association legalized the use of steel-shafted golf clubs. And again, on behalf of Drew Kelly, as we play every year in the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, we'd like to tell Kevin that there's no longer a need for the wooden shafts. So you know.
I like the graphite.
Oh, yeah, I bet you do. 1955, Sugar Ray Robinson knocked out Carl Olsen and regained his world middleweight boxing title. 1973, Jim Bakken of the St. Louis Cardinals kicked 6 field goals against the Atlanta Falcons. Eric Dickerson became only the second player to run for more than 2,000 yards in the season in 1984. The only other had been O.J. Simpson with 2,003 to that point. Dickerson ended up, I think, with 2,184 for the year. 1985, Jerry Rice began a streak of 100 consecutive games with a reception. Now we have records like Antonio Brown gets 5 receptions in a game, including a cheap square out against Jacksonville, just to make sure he kept it going.
You have something with Antonio. You've got a bad spot for Antonio Brown, don't you?
I think he's a great player. I just can't stomach faux records and the buildup of faux records.
I wasn't a big fan of that record either.
I think he is a great player. I wish he was on my team. A great player. Not a good player. He is a great player who gets every single ounce out of his body. Every ounce. And if I say anything about him, it's only just to give you the needle.
Oh, I know. Believe me.
All right. You can't stomach the Cincinnati Bengals to the point where your professionalism is absolutely compromised. Well, that's actually on several stories.
Yeah, but, and I'm not going to deny that either.
Anthony Cosenza is with CincyJungle.com, part of the SB Nation. Anthony, welcome. First time we've had you on. Great to have you with us.
Hey, good to be on. Thanks for having me.
All right. The Bengals right now are the number one seed at this hour in the AFC. So they had a bye and home field throughout. When you've watched them play, let's start with the offense. What has the running game meant to Andy Dalton having an effective season?
Well, you know, it's actually been a lot, believe it or not, a lot of the offensive success this year has been on Dalton's right arm. He's been winging the ball around very well, distributing it to a lot of different talented players on the offense, and really limiting the turnovers that you've seen through the previous 4 years in his career. So that's kind of actually been the key. The running game has been there. Giovanni Bernard has been cracking off runs. I think he's about 5.1 or so yards per carry this year. Jeremy Hill has really started to hit his stride the past 2 games, but he has largely struggled throughout the season after being, you know, such a sensational rookie last year. So I think he's relied on those guys a bit. Actually, Dalton himself has been running the ball pretty well. So they have a pretty balanced attack, but to this point, they've been throwing the ball a bit more.
And when they get in the red zone, Eifert's the guy. What's made him an effective red zone target at tight end?
Just the size and the general mismatches that he provides against opposing defenses. I mean, I've seen games this year where a safety has tried to cover him in the red zone, a team's best corner has tried to cover him in the red zone, and then they obviously have tried the linebacker route, and none of them have worked. So there have been very, very few, if any, missed opportunities between Dalton and Eifert in the red zone. You know, luckily they were facing a pretty lowly Browns team last week when Eifert was hurt, so his absence didn't really wasn't really felt as much, but he's been a major key as to what this team has done on offense. He's been a major key as to what Dalton has been able to do as a quarterback this year and the efficiency you've seen from him. So having him back healthy and him being the primary tight end for the first time in his career with the Bengals has just been absolutely huge.
Which gets to the point, I've talked years ago, Brian Scott, who went to Penn State, played in the NFL for years, and he was a safety for years in the NFL. And I was talking to him about covering tight ends, and he said the mismatches happen because of pure size.
has that allowed Dalton now to have options in the red zone because now they can create the mismatches that Brian talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. And even though Dalton has been very accurate this year, and he's accurate on kind of he's been more accurate on those short and medium routes throughout his career, but there have been a little bit of accuracy issues throughout his career, and just having a 6'6" guy with the enormous catch radius going across the middle on some of these routes in the red zone, it leaves a larger margin for potential error on the throws from Dalton. I think, you know, if Eifert, a guy who's 6'6" with a gigantic wingspan, can go up and get a number of different passes while being guarded by a guy who's maybe 6'1", 6'2", if he's a defensive back, you know, that just gives a major advantage to the Bengals offense. It's very hard for a defensive back that has that size limitation compared to Eifert. It's very hard for them to guard him, especially in kind of a short area of space that there is to work with in there.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward to that very, very much. And that's the matchup with the Steelers. What worked the first time against Pittsburgh?
A number of different things. You know, Pittsburgh's been kind of a different team this year. They tend to have these immense offensive explosions. They've got some wins with a backup quarterback. But there are other times where their offense just kind of looks pedestrian, and maybe it's just going up against some of those better teams, better defenses. You know, last week you saw them absolutely explode again on offense, and they were absolutely unstoppable. The first time they played the Bengals, I think there were a number of different kind of weird circumstances that played into that game. It was Ben's first game back from injury. Maybe there was a little bit of rust. The Bengals also got their former Pro Bowl linebacker Vontaze Burfict back for the first time that season. He had been on the PUP or the short-term IR list. So, you know, I think a number of those factors played into it. I think there was a little bit of a shell shock nature for the Steelers in losing Le'Veon Bell in that game. I think they maybe didn't emotionally recover as well as some might have thought they could have. But you know, I all in all, the Bengals defense kind of stifled the Steelers offense. You know, I mean, they stopped the run for the most part. They created turnovers. I think Ben had 3 interceptions on the afternoon, and they only allowed 10 points. And really, since Burfict has been back, there's only been one game where the team has let up any kind of large amount of points, and that was 34 against the Cardinals in Arizona. Otherwise, you're looking at scores of 10 and 6 and 3 over the past 5 or so weeks.
What about defensively, what's allowed the Bengals to do well this year? And secondary-wise, let's face it, Ben Roethlisberger is going to put a lot of heat on them. So secondary-wise, how have the Bengals held up this year?
Well, the key to the defense in general has been the defensive line. And last year, the Bengals' defensive line suffered a bit. And I think it was because of attrition of it due to injury and free agency and things of that nature. But in years past, they always prided themselves on having such a strong defensive line and the ability to rotate guys in, place them in different spots along the line, and generate pressure from really any position on the defensive line. This offseason, they really made a push to reestablish that rotation and make sure guys are more fresh. And you have the return of Michael Johnson at defensive end, which is a big addition. They brought in Pat Sims, a backup defensive tackle. And then Geno Atkins had another year to recover from a knee injury. I think he maybe rushed back last year, and he's been an absolute monster once again. So that's been the key to the overall defense. The secondary has been the beneficiary of the play up front. And I think most of all is Reggie Nelson, the veteran safety that the Bengals have. He has a league-leading 7 interceptions this year, which is the most by far of his career. He's probably going to make the Pro Bowl. He's been playing very well. Adam Jones, some know him as Pac-Man, he's been playing very well. He's been hurt a little bit the last few weeks, but he's been a big key to what the cornerback group has been doing. Dre Kirkpatrick, the other starting corner, has had a little bit of ups and downs, and you know, they're kind of putting some things together now with duct tape and glue because of some injuries in the secondary. But all in all, they're playing very well. They're up there in the amount of quarterback sacks in league leaders as a squad, and they're number one in scoring defense in terms of points allowed. So it's working pretty well for them.
Yeah, no question about that. It has. What about
Jones as the return guy, what kind of difference maker does he make in special teams that separates Cincinnati from other teams?
Yeah, he's been huge. It's been a little bit of a frustration for Bengals fans of late. In the last couple years, you know, you'd see these big plays from him, but the coaches just didn't want to risk too big of an injury to a guy who was valuable to them on defense. So he'd only see him get these kind of spot punt return, spot kick return duties, but every time he seemed to touch the ball, there was a big play being made. So this year they kind of increased his role a little bit. He still splits time with Brandon Tate, but things are kind of looking a little bleak for him playing this week. Unfortunately, I heard today that his foot that's been bugging him the past three or so weeks, he showed up in a boot today and was riding around on a little mini scooter with his foot casted up. So I don't know if that's totally precautionary. They just totally want to keep him off the foot, or if that's a sign that he's going to miss his second game in 3 weeks. I don't know. But if he is out there and his foot is feeling okay, I'd expect him to make at least one or two big plays in the return game.
Yeah, I mean, he's been huge there all year long. A.J. Green, I haven't mentioned Green yet in all this. We talked about matchups. The Steelers secondary has certainly had not exactly what you call a highlight reel of moments. What about the matchup with Green versus that secondary, in your opinion?
Well, Pittsburgh always had a tendency to be able to shut down, you know, even if there were some perceived weaknesses over the years in the secondary. They had an ability to shut down the Bengals' top wide receiver. And Chad Johnson, for all the good things he did and all the numbers he put up with the Bengals, he was virtually a no-show against the Steelers in his career. He had very little impact in those games, and you saw that the Bengals lost the majority of those games against the Steelers. So it's been a little bit of a different story with Green. He stepped up a bit more in his career against the Steelers and the Ravens in those big divisional games when the Bengals need some offense. He's made a couple of big plays. He had a good game against them last time around. I think if the Bengals are able to give Andy Dalton time, that's the big key, and that's what they've largely been able to do this year. I think Dalton can pick apart the little bit of a weaker secondary of the Steelers and Green kind of putting up those big numbers from Dalton. But it's going to be about that offensive line play, because if there is one thing the Steelers defense just knows how to do, regardless of who they have on the back end of the defense, it's getting to the quarterback and finding creases in an offensive line to make the quarterback uncomfortable. So if they're able to find a way to do that this Sunday, you know, maybe that limits the damage Green does against the Steelers secondary.
Right. No question about that. What's the atmosphere like in Cincinnati? Is it thrilled with what they've done? Is it cautious because of past history? What is it?
Both. I think it's cautious optimism, just because this team has shown so many good things over the past, you know, almost 5 years now, but the result at the end of the year has been the same. And I think fans are totally excited about the franchise record-setting 8-0 start this year. I think they're very excited about the efficiency of the offense, the growth Andy Dalton has shown, but I think they're still sitting here saying, show me more. I need to see you in January. I need to see you against some of these big guys. You know, the two losses the Bengals have this year were on primetime television, and though they were only by a combined 7 points and they're against two teams that are likely to be in the playoff picture at a minimum, they still have to learn how to win those types of games. And whether it's at home or on the road, they have to beat these good teams. They have to beat them on the big stage. And I think that's where a lot of the fan base right now for the Bengals is residing. I think they're excited. I think they're very pleased with what they've seen, but they just need to see more in the January month.
Anthony, this is a great pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us today and giving us the insight.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on, and hope we can do it again soon.
Anthony Cosenza from CincyJungle.com, part of SB Nation. We'll come back, tell you about a trade in Major League Baseball that affects the Pirates and the Mets as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKO. All right, so the Pirates deal Neil Walker to the Mets a year away from free agency in exchange for Jonathan Neese, who's also a year away from free agency. Seems convenient.
The Pirates, I mean, this is what the Pirates are looking at doing. I mean, the bottom line for the Pirates is this. They're looking to take Josh Harris and make him the everyday second baseman. They love his bat. Walker has more power than Harrison. Harrison is for a better average. Put Harrison at second. Put Jordy Mercer at short. Have Jung Ho Gung play third. That's what they're looking to do. They then ship him to the Mets, where he'll fight it out with Dilson. And they'll have to make a decision by the end of the year. The Mets will, between Dilson Herrera, by the way, the former State College Spike, and Neil Walker as to what to do to sign Walker to a long-term contract or not. Walker's 30 years old, coming off a season where he had .269, 32 doubles. Good switch hitter. I mean, he's a good player. Not a great player. He's a good player. And I think he's the kind of good player that makes you better. He is not going to be, you know, maybe somewhere at some point he has himself an all-star season. But for the most part, he's just a guy that's always going to be very good. Jonathan Neese is going to be a fifth starter for the Pirates. This is not an upper rotation guy. He'll be a fifth starter. It'll probably allow them to move Jeff Locke out of that spot. And that's what it is. For Pittsburgh fans, this is a blow because Neil Walker is one of their own. He is a Pittsburgh kid. But the Pittsburgh kid was approaching free agency. And now the reality of what this really is comes into play. Kevin hates when I use this word, but baseball, like all sports, is a business.
I was hoping you'd say game, but I knew better.
And in the business of baseball, Neil Walker is now a Met. Next half hour, Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com.